This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
By shortwave, medium wave, satellite, and the internet, this is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, a regular survey of communications developments produced and presented by Diana Jansen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and although it's still freezing outside, we've had a very hectic weekend. All connected with this.
De laatste meters. Het is krabbelen. Het is eigenlijk helemaal geen schaatsen meer. Het is bijna vallen. Erik Hulsenbos, Henk Ogenet. Wie wordt het? Henk Ogenet voor Erik Hulsenbos.
Live coverage on Radio Netherlands at the finish of the 11-city ice skating race up in Friesland in the northern part of the country. Henk Ogenet came first, and several hours later, 10,074 other people crossed the finish line, including several people who work here at Radio Netherlands.
And when you know that they had to skate 200 kilometres, often against an icy cold wind and a wind chill factor of minus 20 centigrade, that's quite an achievement. There was a lot of international media coverage too of the event, with Radio Netherlands being asked to supply material to networks around the world, like NPR in the USA. We also put an explanation in English on the internet why Holland is so passionate about ice skating. Well, coming up later in the show, we've got a contest in which you can win prizes this time. And while you look for a pen, we'll start with news in brief.
This next part of the programme is very easy. Martijn Roos is programme director of Talk Radio, a commercial station which started broadcasting on the 1st of January. We played a short clip of the opening in Media Network the following day. The station is currently operating from leased studios and offices right here in the Radio Netherlands building. In fact, if I get up and open the door here at Studio One and I shout, Martijn, you probably can hear me.
Well, while Diana's doing that, I'm listening to them on the radio. See if we can find them on medium wave. In fact, they're not there at the moment. Let's try the cable.
Toch een beetje een uitwisseling, ook op die manier.
Ja, daar heb je gelijk.
Dan kunt u reageren. Dit is ook weer Talk Radio. Ik ben Monique.
Ik ben Clary.
Telefoonnummer is 05.
Right, back behind the microphone. This time last year, Veronica News Radio was broadcasting on 1395 kilohertz. They went bankrupt within a few months. So how will Martijn ensure that Talk Radio doesn't go the same way?
Well, I don't have to do a lot. You see, we have a different approach. We have a different amount of money that we're going to put into it. And I think one of the reasons that there wasn't any successful VNR, as we call it, was the budget. It was too big and they were spending too much money. They had too many people working and they had a very different approach, which was a bit confusing for the audience. You see, they try to integrate a news station and a talk radio station and a music station in one station, which I think is bound to fail.
So Martijn's solution is to create what he claims is 24 hours of talk. The concept of talk radio isn't new, although there are major differences between the way it's done in Europe compared with North America. Perhaps the most obvious difference concerns the presenters. In North America, hosts such as Rush Limbaugh have very clear political opinions. In Holland, Martijn Roos believes the human aspect comes first.
I want to hear stories, experiences, I want to hear moral dilemmas, I want to hear choices that people have to make in life. I think that is far more exciting and far more exhilarating radio.
But there is no tradition of talk radio in the Netherlands. Doesn't that cause problems?
No, you don't need a tradition to start anything new. I mean, that's why this is going to be a boom, because it is new. It's a totally different approach to radio than we're used to.
Talk Radio's American consultant has clearly advised them to look for presenters with personality and a story to share with others. They haven't been selected on radio experience.
Exactly, because that is what it's all about, personality. I mean, people are not going to tune into a talk radio program or station for the subjects. They're going to tune in for the personalities, for the presenters. They become their friends. They become their acquaintances. They have to tell something about themselves as well. Not only ask the questions, every presenter gets the audience that he deserves. So if you have a stupid presenter, you get stupid people on the radio. If you have an intelligent, witty, nice, open presenter, you get the same kind of people.
But to start with, people have to know you're there.
I'm sure it's not going to be an overnight hit. Certainly not. It's going to take us 3 to 5 years, and then we come back to your first question. Can we last? Well, since we have a small budget.
How big is your budget?
I'm not going to tell you. It's a secret. but you can safely say we have a budget that even if we don't have any listeners, well, let's not exaggerate, a small amount of listeners, we can stretch it for 3 years for sure. And you need 3 to 5 years to build a new station and certainly a new concept.
Until March the 1st, the station is commercial free. It's difficult to persuade advertisers to invest in a new medium, unless there are independent audience figures to convince them it's worthwhile. The station says it's on the air around the clock, but in fact it inherited an agreement set up by Veronica News Radio. Talk Radio Holland leaves the air for 3 hours starting at 19 hours UTC, so that Radio Tirana in Albania can beam religious programs from Transworld Radio into the UK on the same frequency. So in fact, they're not a 24-hour station.
Absolutely true. You got me there. Well, it's not voluntary, but thank God we're not only on the 1395 medium wave, but we're also everywhere in Holland on the cable.
Right. You're doing an experiment with English between 3 and 6 hours UTC, and that's very early on Saturday mornings. How's that going?
Well, I'm sorry I missed part of the program, so I can't really say anything about it. It's an American guy called Shai, and he has tried to convince me that I need an English-based program for foreign people living in Holland. I'm not so sure that I do, and he has I've given him two shows to prove I'm wrong.
And if you want to listen to the second and possibly last show, check 1395 kilohertz between 3 and 6 hours UTC this Saturday morning. If, as a result, you can hear them, a reception report would be welcome to English Service, Talk Radio, P.O. Box 345, Postal Code 1200AH in Hilversum, the Netherlands.
Now, continuing with news in brief, we flash back to January of 1996.
Welcome to all our listeners. This is Radio Denmark International broadcasting in English. I'm Julian Isherwood, and I'll be your host.
Indeed, after an absence of several decades, Danish radio decided to restore a short segment in English as part of its Danish language shortwave service. A 15-minute magazine programme in English was broadcast twice a month as part of celebrations linked with Copenhagen being the cultural capital of Europe. Danish radio is financed by licence fees, and the feeling in Denmark has been that Danish citizens shouldn't finance programmes directed at people who don't pay for them. Last year proved to be the exception, not the rule, because the last English language programme from Danish radio went out in December as the cultural festivities ended. The English producer, Julian Isherwood, who made the programme, has now decided to relaunch the show as part of a one-man initiative.
What we've decided to do now is, or what I've decided to do now in conjunction with the World Radio Network, is to produce exactly the same programme outside the auspices of Danish broadcasting. And basically what happens is this: in the month of January, this month, it'll be produced twice a month. But as from February, it'll be produced every week. So we'll be doing more or less exactly the same program and just transmitting it in a different way. Unfortunately, to start with at least, it's not going to be broadcast on the shortwave and only through the satellite channels of the World Radio Network. but at least it's being broadcast.
Now, the first programme went out on Saturday, January the 4th. Have you had any reaction yet?
Yes, in fact, I have. In fact, there have been several radio stations who've already contacted me and asked if they can use the programme in their own broadcasts, and we're at the moment discussing this with WRN, the World Radio Network, for them to get a feed from them of the programme.
And when's the next broadcast scheduled for?
January the 19th. That's the third Sunday of January. But as of February, it'll be broadcast every Sunday.
Now, if people are interested in reacting, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, if people want to get in touch with me, not just for reactions to the programme itself, but also if they want to hear anything about Denmark, that sort of thing, they can get hold of me on the internet. The address is ji@euroword, that's EUROWORD.dk, and I'd be happy to receive any reactions whatsoever from those who listen, good or bad, or as I say, if there's anything they'd like to hear about Denmark, then just drop me a message and I'll see if I can help them.
It sounds like a bit of a personal crusade.
Well, it is a bit. I mean, I think Denmark and Albania are the only two countries in the OSCE, that's over 52 nations, who only broadcast in their own language on shortwave. In other words, they don't have an English language broadcast. And since there are only 5 million people in the world who actually understand Danish, nobody else really has a chance of understanding or hearing what goes on in Denmark. So I felt that the decision to drop the program by the Danish Broadcasting Corporation was wrong. And since I've been unable in the short time that I've had to sort of try and get them to continue the program, I've been unable to get them to do so. I felt that the program needed to go on, and this was perhaps one way of getting Danish Broadcasting to realize that if you are a public broadcaster, you're going to have to give this sort of service to the world, or other people are going to do it for you.
Are you trying to do this on a commercial basis?
No, it's purely non-commercial, and it's actually based on exactly the same journalistic ethics as the Danish Broadcasting Authority. I'll be quite frank and say that my hope is that Danish Broadcasting will realise their mistake and bring the programme back, at which point the WRN broadcast, as it is at the moment at least, will cease, and hopefully I'll go back to producing it for the Danish Broadcasting Corporation.
But haven't I heard your voice on Denmark's radio on the domestic service reading news?
Indeed. There is a 5-minute morning news broadcast in English, which is beamed on FM only to Denmark. It used to go out on the medium wave and you could pick it up in other parts of Europe, but that's no longer the case, and it's only sent domestically, in fact.
And who listens to that?
Our target group are people who happen to be in Denmark at any point in time whose first language of communication is English or who do not understand Danish. These can be businessmen, they can be people who simply live here for shorter periods who don't understand Danish or don't learn Danish and need some sort of indication as to what's going on in the world each day, and that's what we try to give them in this morning broadcast.
De lytter til Radio Danmark. You are listening to Radio Denmark.
Julian Isherwood was on the line from Copenhagen. Now to Australia, where domestic radio announced on Friday, January 3rd, that religious broadcaster HCJB was planning to build a relay station on 500 hectares in outback Western Australia. The Protestant station has its main transmitting facility near Quito in Ecuador, but president of HCJB, Ronald Klein, was quoted as saying they've been working on plans to expand into Asia for the last 2 years. Now it's up to the Australian government to grant them permission to broadcast.
They're willing to allow a Christian station to beam into a Muslim world or a Hindu world and take the criticism from the government of those countries saying, you're allowing this, why? If the Australian government is willing to say, because we believe in the freedom of speech or whatever they're going to answer, then there's a high probability it will happen.
David Main-Donald, who's HCJB's Australian director, is more cautious, pointing out to Media Network that no firm plans are yet in place and that the station still has to start negotiations with the Australian federal government before any building can be considered.
Meanwhile, back in Europe, Radio Prague's been sending out Christmas and New Year greetings on a compact disc. And apparently they have plans to expand in the field of new media.
Radio Prague airs 39 half-hour programs on shortwave every day. Heard from two 100-kilowatt transmitters located not far from Little Michel in eastern Bohemia.
2 hours of the Czech and English service programs are propagated daily via satellite from the London-based World Radio Network. One half-hour program intended for the English-speaking audience in and around Prague is broadcast on FM.
Having entered the World Wide Web, Radio Prague is planning shortly to expand its services on Internet, on which we currently offer our news bulletins and some other selected programs.
Radio Prague is on the go.
But exactly how isn't clear. We'll find out later. To find out what's been happening on the listening front, we bring up the line to Arthur Cushion now, in a much warmer Invercargill. Arthur, I understand there have been some severe budget cuts to domestic radio in New Zealand.
Yes, there has, Jonathan. The $27 million budget has gone down to $19 million. And, you know, the old favourites like sessions for children, correspondence school for those in outlying areas, even a program for farmers, a rural report. Some have been completely deleted, others have been cut back. And a lot of the personalities have gone along with their programs, which is a sad outlook for 1997. But, National Radio is a public service radio funded entirely by government grant through what we call New Zealand On Air. That is the organisation that takes in our listing and television fee of $110 a year, and I would say 9/10 of it goes to television. Radio is a very, very poor relation these days.
Now, you mentioned that the cuts have come to the domestic service. Do we know what's going to happen to Radio New Zealand International?
Well, that's inclusive in this budget at the moment, so their budget doesn't seem to be cut at the moment. It's mainly in the field of programs for minorities, really, and of course the Broadcasting Charter in New Zealand specifically states that minorities should be catered for, so, you know, children and the farming community and those are rightly so quite upset because they feel that their field of interest are not being catered for. Radio New Zealand International, Jonathan, their mailbox session is on recess for the January. It returns on February the 3rd at 04:30 on 15115, on the following Thursday at 08:30 on 9700, and on the Friday at 19:30 on 9810.
Arthur, we understand that stations in Papua New Guinea went 24 hours as from the 6th of January. You've got any more information on that?
Yes, that's right, Jonathan. It started off really over the Christmas and New Year period when the one on the big 100-kilowatt on 4890 was running requests and people phoning in with greetings to their relatives, old-time radio, really, and it was great to hear this type of programming still existing. And as you say, as from January 6, the whole network is going 24 hours. That means the period 1400 to 1930 will now be carried on medium wave, short wave, including the tropical band station. So listeners in the distant areas, particularly in North America, will have a chance of hearing some of those low-powered stations in Papua New Guinea. Moving into the Pacific and Guam and KTWR, their English transmission to Asia, this one's being heard 1000 to 1200, and it's 9870 kilohertz. And Nigeria, the test transmissions from Lagos continue to be heard, this time on another frequency, 7255. They have a tone at 0600 and go straight into music. There's no announcements indicating the transmission, but it's 7255, and we hear them opening at 0600 UTC.
Thanks, Arthur, and that leads nicely into this next item. During the past 36 years since Nigeria gained its independence from Britain, that large African country has enjoyed just 10 years of elected civilian rule. The rest of the time, up to the present day, has seen a succession of military administrations. Although a major African oil producer, with many educated people, and with a rapidly expanding infrastructure, this country of 100 million people is in per capita terms one of the poorest in the world. 50 million live in absolute poverty. Some argue that with the growing resentment against military rule and widespread corruption, Nigeria's fragile unity is increasingly under threat. If destabilized and it breaks apart, then it could do so on a scale that will be 50 times worse than the tragedies we've witnessed so far in Rwanda and Burundi. The centralization of power, including the broadcasting system, has undermined the federalism, designed to restrain the dangerous ethnic and regional tensions that sparked the Biafran War from 1967 to 70. It's against this background that in the course of last year, the National Liberation Council of Nigeria, composed of many voices who oppose the current military government in Lagos, set up a clandestine radio station. Although it was initially kept secret, it soon turned out they'd hired a 500-kilowatt transmitter in Meyerton, operated by the Centec Facilities Organization of South Africa. Each night at 19.05 UTC, they currently put out an hour of programming on 6205 kilohertz.
The time is 5 minutes past eight. This is Radio Kudirat, Nigeria, the voice of democracy.
When they started in June of 1996, they called the radio station Radio Democrat International. We contacted Ola Soyinka, a spokesperson for the station and an administrator for the National Liberation Council of Nigeria. On the line from London, he explains why, soon after the launch, they changed the name of the clandestine station.
Shortly after we concluded all the arrangements and started broadcasting, as you know, just before June 12th, President Abiola's wife, Alhaji Kudirat, was assassinated. And we wanted to send a very clear message to the junta that assassinating or rubbing out or incarcerating individuals can never get rid of the idea that we are trying to push. And there's no better way than to haunt them daily with the name of a woman we suspected them of murdering.
And you're doing this in the form of shortwave broadcasting?
That's right, yes. We obviously need to get as wide a coverage over the whole country as possible because Radio Kudirat aims to enlighten people across the country to be a unifying force, basically, and mobilize people against this repressive regime. So shortwave was the most sensible answer in terms of covering the entire territory of Nigeria.
Now, you've been on the air for some months now. I mean, how do you know you're getting through?
That's quite simple. We have an enormous amount of feedback. Obviously, we broadcast contact numbers and PO box details. We obviously have our monitors on the ground. A lot of the feedback comes via the groups, the pro-democracy groups, and obviously they have feelers, members, people on the ground back in Nigeria. So by mail, by telephone, by fax, and by direct contact, we know that people are listening to it, and we know that people are very excited by it because, of course, they have, up till now, a non-stop diet of government propaganda.
Not surprisingly, the Nigerian government doesn't agree with that statement. In the final months of 1996, the country's external service, the Voice of Nigeria, announced a series of transmitter tests in preparation for the resumption of regular programmes. So far, channels in the 19 and 41-metre bands have been heard testing on a regular basis, but the programmes haven't yet resumed. Ola Soyinka of Radio Kudirat, Nigeria, says the government has been concerned about the opposition shortwave broadcasts beamed into the country. Nigeria has a large shortwave listening audience.
There's no doubt that it was precipitated by the commencement of broadcasting of Radio Kudirat. To Nigeria's, the junta's eternal shame, a major public institution like the Voice of Nigeria has remained dormant for over a year with no explanation, no obvious reason, and continuous consumption of public funds. Suddenly, people turned round and began to ask questions because, of course, they were expected to be the natural outlet for countering Radio Kudirat. So now, yes, bottoms are being kicked, money is being poured down this
same hole that the rest of the money has been disappearing into, and they're trying to get a service up to counter Radio Kudarat's basically spreading of truth.
Are you regarded as illegal in Nigeria?
In Nigeria, we are regarded as illegal, subversive, and treasonable. And, of course, this is the typical military method by which they pretty much try and convict you before they manage to lay their hands on you. In other words, they have convicted us, if you like, in advance or of committing treason. So the message is clear. If they do get hold of us, we would face the penalty for treason, which can be death.
So it means to say you have to take security precautions in trying to make the programs?
That's right, and that's why, you know, we do make it quite difficult for, you know, we keep everything we can in terms of physical locations, etc., as confidential as possible. Obviously, a number of people have to be visible and contactable, but we do minimize risks. We've got a very scattered and distributed operation, so that finding out, for instance, where the letters go to or where the fax number is located won't really help anybody in getting any idea of where the operation works from. You know, we pass things down a chain.
Right. Now, but if listeners are interested in getting in touch with you as a result of hearing your broadcast, what address do they write to?
Right. It's a London address. We are at P.O. Box, you just address it, Radio Kudarat, Nigeria, P.O. Box 9663, London SE1, that's Southeast 1, 3LZ.
No plans to use the internet?
We are setting up a website underneath the auspices of the United Democratic Front of Nigeria. So in other words, Radio Kudarat transcripts and a feedback section will be included on that website. It's currently being developed and will shortly be going live, and as soon as that happens we'll be publicizing that. But we are contactable by email, and that is basically the initials for Radio Kudarat Nigeria, RKN, and then it's at postlin, P for Peter, ostlin.demon.co.uk.
Right, that's it. We're out of here.
Yes, she's off ice skating. I haven't a clue what to do, but we'll both be back in 7 days.
Copyright 1997.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. Some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.